Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the program. It's May 1st, 2018, and in the Hebrew calendar, the 16th of Iyar, 5778, and it's also the 31st day of the Omer count. I am Walter Bingham, and it's my great pleasure to keep you company for the next 40 minutes. Later in the program, you will hear part 2 of the 3-part story about the life of Jack Nechanoff, a Jew, but who has married out and came under the spell of missionaries. It's a compelling story. Don't miss it. Also today, the tale of two hearts. But I begin with something on which I feel compelled to comment. The much-heralded Jerusalem Post annual conference took place this week in New York, with the participation of a number of Israel's government ministers and politically influential personalities. I commend this idea to bring Israel even closer to at least the East Coast Jewish community. But I'm baffled at the inclusion among the featured speakers of the comedienne Roseanne Barr, a good person in her own right, but what can she contribute to the public relations of Israel? And then there is Ehud Olmert, a spent force who was convicted of criminal offenses and served a prison sentence. Is he an Israeli role model to present to the American public? Or is it perhaps his attempt to try and re-enter politics, God forbid? And what was one of his main points during the interview? That Israel should not attack the nuclear facilities of Iran, because we are not capable of destroying them, giving a tailwind to the enemy. And then he spoke predictably about his peace offers to the Palestinians. And what were they? He was going to give away the heartland of Israel and divide Jerusalem. All that in return for nothing, just empty promises. I ask again, should he have been presented as an important personality with constructive ideas? I also found it extremely inappropriate that Dr. Ruth Westheimer, who was wounded while fighting as a scout and sniper with the Haganah in the War of Independence, was listed among the conference speakers as a sex therapist. Surely that was not fitting. Was it the idea that sex sells and fills all? More after this break.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
I begin with a report of an event titled Israel's Place Among the Nations, with the participation of the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and in front of an audience of the diplomatic corps, and also a few specially invited guests. It took place at the Menachem Begin Heritage Center in Jerusalem, and was introduced by its president, Herzl Markov, because it was held in the framework of a celebration of the life and work of Menachem Begin. Here's part of what Herzl Markov said.
Israel's relationship with the rest of the world was complicated from the very beginning. Many countries had not supported the renewal of Jewish sovereignty in the ancient homeland of the Jewish people. Many more did not expect us to survive the war which quickly followed our declaration of independence. And we were not exactly overwhelmed by offers of support and assistance. David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister, reflected the feeling of isolation of many Israelis with his famous comment dismissing the United Nations, shmum. In a translation, the UN is nothing. He also spoke for many when he said that what was important was not what the goyim say, but what the Jews do. And yet, Israel forged many important international relationships in those early years. We established ourselves as an ally of the West in the Cold War, and in particular formed a unique friendship and alliance with the United States of America, which remains a cornerstone of our foreign and defense policy. By the time Menachem Begin was elected Prime Minister in 1977, we were an established member of the international community with close partners in diplomacy, trade, and security. Begin's approach to foreign affairs, like his thinking on so much else, was informed by the teaching and philosophy of Zeev Ziabotinsky, one of the greatest thinkers and visionaries of the Zionist movement. Ziabotinsky had written, as part of the oath for the member of his youth movement, and I apologize, it sounds much more poetic in Hebrew, "I shall approach the family of nations with nobility and might, as a lion meeting lions, as brother meeting my brothers, and not as a vanquished meeting my conquerors." Begin epitomized this philosophy. He believed in a self-confident Israel, an independent Israel that would do what it thought was right, even sometimes against the wishes of its friends. Begin's decision to bomb Saddam Hussein nuclear reactor in Iraq was taken in the face of opposition from every one of Israel's international allies. In the years to come, Israel would be repeatedly thanked by many of those same countries. But Begin Israel was not arrogant. He was an enlightened liberal nationalist. As Ziabotinsky's words imply, Israel did not seek superiority in the family of nations, but equality. To be judged by the same standard and to be offered the same rights as every other state. Still today, that equal status has not yet been reached.
The Prime Minister expounded the reasons for Begin's universal popularity, achievements, and showing how his pronouncements are still relevant today, before commenting on political matters. Here is an edited recording.
There are many reasons to celebrate Begin's legacy, but I believe that three things make him stand out as a true hero of our people. The first one is liberty. Begin was a great champion and fighter for Israel's independence. In his memoir, The Revolt, he wrote that the be-all and end-all of his ideology was freedom, the freedom and happiness of the individual, also the freedom of our people. He understood that there can be no neutrality in the fight for freedom. He wrote, "If you love freedom, you hate slavery." And Begin hated all forms of tyranny. He wrote that one's very self-respect as a human being lies in resistance to evil, and that meant sacrifice. Begin was willing to sacrifice for the liberty of our people. He wrote, "The idea of freedom would capture our hearts completely, and if it meant the surrender of his personal liberty, he surrendered it. If it required that he leave his family, he left it. If it involved the enduring of torture, he accepted it. If it called for continuous exposure to danger, he resigned himself to it. If it demanded his life, he gave it." So in many ways, Menachem Begin symbolized the essence of our struggle for liberty. He fought for it, he sacrificed for it, he achieved it. And it is our struggle to be a free people in our ancestral homeland that guided his life, and he serves as an emblem and as an example for future generations, because the battle is never over, so that they understand fully the importance of being a free people in our own land, unapologetic Jews, proud Jews. This is the only way that we can maintain our heritage and secure our future. The second reason Begin is remembered is because of security. Begin understood that security comes first. All the other attributes of independence ultimately pale and wither away if you cannot defend your security. In 1981, he dispatched the IDF to destroy the nuclear reactor of a genocidal tyrant that called for the annihilation of Israel. His policy was simple. His policy was right. He said that we will not allow regimes that call for Israel's destruction to acquire nuclear weapons. This is the strike that genuinely blocked Saddam Hussein's path to nuclear weapons. Well, the UN passed Resolution 487, strongly condemning Israel. A leading European diplomat, he said this airstrike on Saddam's nuclear reactor was unacceptable. The New York Times, of course, criticized it. What's new? Begin was unflinching.
On Iran, he said,
and Israel's policy has not changed since Begin. Israel will not allow regimes that seek our annihilation to acquire nuclear weapons. This is why we oppose so resolutely the Iran deal, because it gives Iran a clear path to a nuclear arsenal. It allows, over a few years, unlimited enrichment of uranium, the core ingredient required to produce nuclear bombs and nothing else. And it also does not deal with the ballistic missiles that can deliver this weapon to many, many countries. This is why this deal has to be either fully fixed or fully nixed. And I believe that Begin exemplified for us the commitment to defend Israel's security at all costs, although I believe that in so doing, in the case of Iraq and now in the case of Iran, the security of the entire world is at stake. There is a third reason why Begin is remembered with unique fondness, and that is inclusivity. Begin opened up Israeli society. Up to the great election in which the Likud won the victory under his leadership, the government never changed. It was always one party. Many people felt that they were out of the loop, that they weren't part of Israeli society. And this changed very dramatically with Begin. He immediately began a program to upgrade those neighborhoods in development towns and in Tel Aviv and the center of the country that were dilapidated. And in the physical restructuring of those neighborhoods was really a psychological restructuring, telling all strata of Israeli society, you're all part of this one country. You all deserve a place of honor and integrity. You all can be leaders in this country. And he changed this. He brought young mayors from the development towns into the Likud, and he truly revolutionized Israeli society and Israeli politics in the best sense of the word. Inclusivity, an open, inclusive society, open to all. And this has made Israel a tremendously vibrant country. These are the three reasons that I think Begin is remembered with affection and respect. Liberty, security, inclusivity. But there are many others. I think the most important one is passion. Begin had a passion for our people, for our reconstituted place in history, for justice and truth. He couldn't accept the defamation of the Jewish people. He, who understood the horrors of the Holocaust and knew what we were fighting for, he couldn't accept this slander of the Jewish state. And I think that many around the world felt that passion. And even though some may not have agreed with him, they respected him for it because they knew it was true. For these reasons and more, we remember Begin.
He then turned to Israel's standing in the world.
Today, Israel's diplomatic position is better than it's ever been, because many countries around the world understand what Israel can offer. The security we can offer against terrorism that plagues so many lands, so many continents. In fact, virtually all lands and all continents. And the benefits that our ingenuity can bring to all lands and all continents. This is taking shape before our eyes. We look forward in a few days to open up the American embassy in Jerusalem, and we are deeply appreciative of President Trump's historic decision. So our alliance with the United States has been steadfast and growing stronger and stronger year by year. But equally, we appreciate the fact that we have these growing relations with so many others. I had a wonderful trip to India. It was a tremendously moving experience to see the support and enthusiasm for Israel in India. And we see this everywhere.
The PM continues after the break.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country from Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
The PM continues.
Support and enthusiasm for Israel in India. And we see this everywhere. We see it in so many countries who understand that their people can have a better life by cooperating with Israel in so many fields. I have to say that one of the meetings that I remember most was a meeting in the United Nations. It's not completely nothing. It has its uses and its purposes, and we seek the alliances with many countries and the goodwill of the international community. We don't always get it, and certainly we don't get it at the UN, but at the UN I met many, many African leaders who came to a special exposition that we did on Israeli technology in Africa. And one after the other, these young Israelis showed what they were doing to help villagers have water. African woman would have to walk 4 hours one direction to a distant well and walk back 4 hours to bring water to her children. An Israeli innovation gave her water from the air. It's miraculous. And anything that you can think of in agriculture and health and IT, Israeli technology is revolutionizing Africa. And this constant thirst for innovation is what makes the Jewish people so unique. I think it's what makes the Jewish state so unique. And I'm very glad that so many countries around the world today are discovering these capacities of Israel and that our friendships are blossoming as never before. I think much of this we have to thank for Menachem Begin. I think if Begin was with us today, I think he'd be proud. He sees that we have a thriving democracy that guarantees the freedom of the individual, the freedom of worship to all religions, just as Begin believed. We have a tolerant society that improves the lives of people around the world, just as Menachem Begin believed. We're at peace with Egypt, a peace that Begin worked for and achieved. And we have peace with Jordan. And our hand is extended to peace to all our neighbors. And I believe that something is changing, perhaps not in our immediate vicinity with our Palestinian neighbors, but beyond that, there is no question that many Arab governments and quite a few of the Arab publics are re-examining their attitudes towards Israel. Because of all the reasons that I mentioned, including Iran, we have, I think, much to be proud about. And I think we have Menachem Begin to be proud about. And join me and all Israelis in celebrating our 70th anniversary. I have no doubt that in another 70 years, Israel will be even stronger and more prosperous than it is today. And Menachem Begin would be very, very proud. Thank you.
But buckle up, because as I said last week, we're in for a very rough ride. There may be a confrontation with the proxies of Iran. And now to the second of three parts of the story.
They took Jeff Nekonoff into the net of Messianic Judaism on one hand and mainstream Christianity on the other, and how he became more and more confused. Last week we heard how a young Jew was looking for a meaning in life, and because there was no or just minimal reference in his home to anything Jewish, he dated non-Jewish girls, eventually married one, and the slide to hell began. Here is how it continued.
I felt afterwards that if I had married Jewish, I definitely wouldn't have wound up there, but who knows what Hashem has in store for us. But it dovetailed everything perfectly at the time.
So you went to an Italian church, I read, and you carried on studying this Messianic Judaism while still going to this church regularly with your wife?
Yes, I wound up, since my wife wasn't so comfortable in the Messianic and the Hebrew Christian congregation, I went looking for a church that she would be comfortable in. And since the main goal of Messianic, quote-unquote, Judaism and Evangelical Christianity are to get you saved by you accepting Jesus as your Savior and Lord, my goal was also, since my wife was sort of following me and intellectually accepting this and that, to bring her along with me and get her, quote-unquote, saved at the church that I found. And I was studying Messianic theology the whole time. I never stopped. It was always quite interesting. I had a voracious appetite for it. And that actually got me in trouble in the church because we started also attending a weekly Bible study there. And you're coming from a Gentile background of people who grew up mostly Catholic or other Christian denominations. And in the Bible study, they would discuss aspects of the New Testament that in Messianic Hebrew Christian circles, you were taught that, oh, this is very Hebrew mind. This is very Jewish. The thought is very Jewish. I would always bring this up. And they didn't like that because they're like, leave this Jewish stuff alone. It was pretty much, quote unquote, nailed to the cross with Jesus is what a lot of Christians use that term, meaning the law, meaning the 613 commandments that Jews are supposed to do. We don't need to do that since Jesus was nailed to the cross, those were nailed as well. So leave that in the past. This is the new covenant. Move on.
Was that organization Jews for Jesus or some other organization?
That was a mainstream church called Church of the Nazarene. Mm-hmm. It's a very big denomination in the United States. It's pretty moderate to heaven by believing. You need to believe in Jesus to be saved.
Did they do anything at Jewish festivals, let's say Pesach, for instance, Passover?
No, I tried to bring that in because I was affiliated. I was friends with the Jews for Jesus in Manhattan on East 31st Street. So they kept saying, why don't you try and do this? We'll teach them the Hebrew roots, and we'll teach them how to reach out to Jewish people. And I was completely of that belief system as well. So I said, that's great, let's do it. But the church didn't want to do it because they didn't like to offend. So they didn't want to reach out. They didn't want to do Christ in the Passover or anything like that. That's just Jesus.
So do I understand you right that the concept of Messianic work of Jews for Jesus is quite different from that church to which you went?
Yes. They're two parts of the same program. They work in hand in hand together. When Jews for Jesus attract Jews to the belief system, most of the time they will send that Jewish person to an evangelical church unless they feel that the Messianic Hebrew Christian congregation would be better for the individual. Mm. Meaning maybe the person has relatives who are more Jewish identified, so if they send them to the Messianic congregation, it might be a better fit for the person. But I'd say the missionary organizations such as Jews for Jesus, Chosen People Ministries, there's a few of them out there, send most of their Jewish inquisitees, to evangelical churches because they believe they're more solid in their teaching, in their biblical teachings.
Did you have children at that time?
My daughter was born in the midst of my going to this Messianic congregation, and my son was born towards the end, 2 years before I left.
So they were too young to understand what was going on?
Baruch Hashem, yes. They have no recollection of it whatsoever.
And what happened at Christmas and Hanukkah? Did you have a Christmas tree and Hanukkah candles?
The very interesting thing about the Messianic movement, a lot of Christianity, evangelical Christianity as well as Catholicism, Protestant belief system, a lot of it has pagan roots, and Messianic Judaism has huge issues with Christmas trees. I believe it's in Jeremiah where it says you shouldn't cut down a tree and decorate it with tinsel or worship it. So they utilize this pasuk in the Tanakh to say you can't have a Christmas tree. Plus, they believe that Jesus was born during the holiday of Sukkot for whatever reason. They have all these mathematical calculations which may or may not make sense. And so they don't like to celebrate Christmas at all, and they don't. So when we first got married, before I was doing my search, we put a Christmas tree up to make my wife happy. After we became affiliated with the Masonic movement, I stopped immediately putting up the Christmas tree. So that actually got rid of pagan influences of mainstream Christianity, as well as Easter, too, was a big issue with them, because the whole Easter Bunny issue, how does that relate to any kind of belief in God? So a lot of mainstream Christian beliefs they get rid of, and it's very big right now in the United States in evangelical circles. They're into this Hebrew roots movement, which teaches them the same thing. So they are also removing traces of that Roman pagan influence that pervades mainstream Christianity. So it's good and bad. It's bad because what they do then is they learn a lot about Judaism, and it gives them a little hook to reach Jews. The good thing about it is, on a bigger picture, when Mashiach does come, they'll see much more clearly that the whole belief system in Jesus was incorrect.
And what about Hanukkah candles?
Hanukkah candles, we do. All Jewish holidays, we did.
You mean the church did it, or you did it privately at home?
No, the Messianic congregation did it. The church did not do anything Jewish. The church would do Christmas and Easter. Easter thing sort of pushed me out of the church. It made me leave.
And then you went to your former Messianic groups, where they called Shuva Israel.
Exactly. It's a congregation in Long Island. It's still around.
Then, Jeff, you became very deeply involved, and you attended even several national Messiah conferences. I suppose this was a path towards leadership ambition. You mentioned before that you wanted or you became a leader. What happened there?
Exactly. I went back to Shuva Israel, and I met with David, and we spoke. And he said, why don't you make a commitment? You already went into this other path of evangelical Christianity. You see, it's not for a Jew. Why don't you commit to the Messianic Jewish belief and movement? So I've attended the UMJC conference in Washington, D.C. in 1998. It was a big week-long pep rally. And even though they believe in a false theology, there's a lot of scholars and intelligent people in the movement. Anyone could justify anything, I've learned since then. Such as if you read an atheist book, there's a few right out right now. If you read it, they make a good point, but a lot of it has to do with your intelligence, your faith, your upbringing. So at all the conferences, I went to that, and then I took a few yeshiva classes through them, through the New England branch of the UMJC.
More after the break.
There was a time you didn't worry about terrorism. It was something that happened in a faraway place or to someone else. But now you want to know. Now you want to understand. Now you're afraid that you might be in the danger zone. You need to listen to Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone every week, where you will find out the truth about what is going on in the world around you. Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone, right here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Here's Jack Meganoff with more.
And then I went to the MJAA National Conference. That's their other organization. They're sort of in competition with each other. One's a branch of the other, but now they're friendly. I went to that conference in Pennsylvania at a place called Messiah College. Very apropos name, the Christian college. And when you're there, you meet a lot of Jewish people who believe in this at these conferences. When you're in the congregations, you don't meet so many Jews. At the conferences, everyone's wearing skull caps, and they're walking around with prayer shawls, and they have a whole shopping mall in the cafeteria, which is selling mainstream art scroll Feldheim books next to the Messianic books. So they're dovetailing everything together, and you feel like you're part of a movement that's prophetic, that's taking over, that everyone eventually will come to see as the truth.
So you were, as I see, really thrown around from one type of Messianic Judaism to another type, the Italian Church and Jew for Israel and Jews for Jesus. You didn't really know where you belonged by the look of it.
Well, the Jews for Jesus and the Jew for Israel were affiliated in the fact that we were friends, but we had issues because they wouldn't send all their Jews to us Messianic congregations because they didn't think we were solid enough. And the problem is, within evangelical Christianity, which Jews for Jesus is a big part of, they don't like Judaizing, which means that a lot of the Jewish customs, there's no need for it once you become a believer in Jesus. So that was a big issue between the two groups. I leaned a lot more toward what Shuva Israel, what the Messianic, what the MJAA and UMJC all believe, where they are the quote-unquote fifth branch of Judaism. A Jews for Jesus is more involved being out in the streets and grabbing Jews into this theology. The Messianic movement is more into being another branch of Judaism and not being so threatening and bringing people in with their version of the truth. So it's two branches of the same tree.
Did you eventually do any teaching at all for this Messianic stuff?
Teaching in front of a group, no. We sat down and I'd love to discuss a chapter or a verse in the Bible. I'm still very big with the internet. I've always been connecting people online. People would always find me and ask me questions. But I was not one to proselytize. My kids at the time went to a local JCC preschool. And while I was there, I never, ever, ever spoke to anybody about my beliefs or Jesus. It was very awkward.
Jeff, at the beginning, you said that you had decided with your wife that your children should be brought up Catholic. Now you had a son. Did you change the plan for his religious future?
No. The plan was going to be Messianic Jewish pioneers, just like the generation ahead of us was doing. They were the ones who created this whole movement. And David at Shuva Israel, while I totally disagree with his belief system and the whole Messianic movement, he did have the kind of connection with an Orthodox Moyle, the rabbi who does the circumcision on an 8-day-old boy, and told me that if you have a boy, who should have a brit milah.
That's a circumcision.
Circumcision. So we actually called him. And he did it, and years later, after I left, I'd asked him, I called him. I said, let me ask you something. I was involved in that Messianic thing. I mentioned the David's name. I said, why, as an Orthodox Jew from a very religious part of Brooklyn, why'd you do this when you knew what we were involved in? So he said something very insightful. He said, the reason I do it is because you're going to get it done anyway, whether it's going to be in the hospital or through a non-Orthodox circumciser. He goes, if I do it, I impart some kind of spiritual blessing where I'm hoping and praying that you will return to Torah with your whole family, and by some type of miracle, you'll all come back and become Torah Jews and believe in Tanakh and get rid of this Mishugas that you believe in at the time. When he told me that, I was blown away.
Very interesting. So tell me now, what was the catalyst for your sudden interest in real Judaism?
The catalyst was we were very happily going to this Messianic congregation in Long Island, Shuvah Israel, and they had told me I was going to the Messianic yeshiva classes. They were weekend classes in Connecticut. And they would say, study normative Jewish books. Don't just read Messianic and Christian theology books. Read normative Jewish books. Go into a Jewish bookstore. Go into Barnes & Noble. Pick up a Jewish book and read it. This way you don't sound like an ignoramus when you're talking, when you're speaking to a Jew, a regular Jew, and you could speak about Jewish issues. So I did this, and I went to Borders of Barnes & Noble. I picked up a book by the author's name is David Klinghoffer. He's a former head editor of National Review. His main issue, what connected him to Hashem and Torah, was buying tefillin and putting on. So I said, great. He bought the tefillin and put it on. Let me buy the tefillin and put it on. But with Hashem's hand guiding me, I was led and had to buy kosher tefillin. I had a check a year later. And I started putting this on. I had no idea how to do this. I did not do it at Bar Mitzvah. I never really saw one up close. I watched the videotape, learned how to put the tefillin on, and I committed to doing this every day except for Shabbos and Yom Tov. Even though I was not yet a Torah Jew, I knew what Shabbos and Yom Tov was, obviously, and I kept doing this. And I read his book. I contacted another friend of mine. His name is Len Mansky. He's in Roslyn, Long Island, not far from me. In my early search, he said, why don't you listen to Tobias Singer? Why don't you listen to his tapes? And I said, I'm not going to listen to his tapes. He's going to be biased. And I had that whole anti-Orthodox frame of mind from what happened to me on AOL. I said, I'm not going to listen to this, yell at me and tell me I'm an evil person to leave my wife. So I never listened to him. But at this point now, there were little cracks in the armor. So I emailed Len. I said, you still have the tape series? I want to listen.
At this point, where there was a crack in the armor, you emailed whom?
My friend Len Mansky. He's a nice traditional Jew from the North Shore of Long Island. Just a nice man. I also wanted to hear these tapes because I wanted to solidify my belief system. And what better way to do it than listening to the antithesis of what I believe to be the truth? So in my brain, I had questions, but I said, if I listen to this and I know his arguments and I can argue them, I will be a very strong, powerful witness for the Messianic movement and Jesus. So I got the tapes from him. I went to his house. He was very open with me. He goes, hey, listen to the tapes. Keep them as long as you like. So I'm listening to them. And as I'm listening to them, the cracks are getting thicker and deeper and breaking. And I started buying more books. And I'm listening. And meanwhile, I'm still going to this Messianic congregation weekly every Shabbos. And I'm in there now, and I'm looking around at people, and I'm watching them, and I'm like, there's nothing Jewish here. This is totally fake. And there was no Jews, and the main issue I had through the whole time, it was in the back of my mind, I never really vocalized it, but how come Orthodox Jews in mass were not coming into our congregation? Why were they not running to us if what we had was the truth? And they would explain because they're so blinded with the scales in front of their eyes. But after being there so many years now, I'm like, what is holding them back? We're out there. We're telling them this message. We're showing them, look how Jewish we are with our Torah and our Ark and our kippot, our skull caps and our threshold and our tzitzits and saying the Shema.
And Jesus.
And right. But to us, Jesus was a fulfillment of the Tanakh. So why couldn't they see this? Why were they so blind? Now, this was nagging me the whole time. I didn't know it until I'm looking around my congregation, two Shabbos in a row, two Shabbats in a row, and I'm looking around at the 100 people, and there's 10 halakhic Jews there, 10 Jews born of Jewish mothers. And I'm looking at them, I'm like, they're more ignorant than I was. They grew up with nothing. They grew up with maybe non-Jewish dads or hippie parents who didn't care whatsoever. I had 100 times more Jewish education than they did. And I said, this is a problem. What am I doing? So I had to take a step back and re-justify my belief system. And by doing so, I realized that this was nonsense. And I even went up to David one of those Sabbath and said to David, I said, if Jesus is God, why do we say every prayer ended in the name of Jesus? Why does God care if we say in the name of whoever, in the name of Jeff, in the name of David? Who cares? If you're praying to God, why do you need this person? And then he would get trying to get into the whole Christian theology about it's the Son of God. It fell down like a house of cards. The armor cracked. Everything broke. Literally within 2 weeks, between reading my books, listening to Tovia, reading David Klinghoffer, and learning about basic Judaism.
Your situation is like that of a mixed-up kid that needed help. Did you then seek help?
I didn't seek help. I wanted to spend some time away and just find myself, I guess you'd say. However, I still wanted to learn about authentic Judaism. I went to a local Judaic store in Merrick, and there was a sign up on the window, beginner Torah classes, beginning Judaism. Come, non-judgmental, come ask your questions. Sit down and schmooze with the rabbi. So I said, what's this? I took it, and I just showed up at one of these Wednesday night classes, and the rabbi, Rabbi Yossi Korngold, bless his soul, he's a great guy, sat down with me, said, tell me a story. I told him pretty much everything I told you, intelligibly. I was mixed up at the time. And he just sat there and listened and smiled. And he said, I don't blame you. Who wouldn't take that path if they grew up with nothing, with just floundering in the middle of an ocean with no anchor? He goes, you found an anchor, you buoyed yourself to it, and this was your truth. And it was only after learning about Torah with him, through books, through other rabbis and other organizations, that I understand now that I was looking for truth and to solidify something. I'm a very black and white person, even though I don't judge people who think in terms of gray, and I'm gray in a lot of issues too, but with my belief system of God, if 2 + 2 = 4, the law of physics and God have to be the same. There can't be 20,000 different truths towards a theology and God.
So did you then eventually break with all this Shuva Israel and these messianic groups and broke off with all your former friends?
I broke off immediately, and David Rosenberg, the messianic pastor, who called himself the messianic rabbi, kept calling me and emailing me and said, come study with me and learn. You're having a crisis in your faith. You're struggling with your faith. And I didn't want to go back because I knew he was very influential with me, and we were friends, and I just wanted some time away. And I was intelligent enough to do something like that because I know you can't be involved in the middle of something and break away from it. So I literally cut it all off in one swoop.
That must have been very difficult, particularly in the framework of a mixed marriage. There is, in Yiddish, there is a saying, it's hard to be a Jew, even in a normal situation.
Yes, very true. In a way, my wife, even though she did, quote-unquote, get saved in the Italian church, at Shuva Yisrael Messianic Church, she liked the people, the place, she liked going there, she liked the singing, but she became a child care worker, so she would be one of the moms who would take care of the children during services. And she came every week with me there because she wouldn't have to sit during the long and boring Hebrew-type service and would be able to go downstairs and stay with the kids that she loved. So when we left, she just said, okay, we're leaving, fine, leave me the heck alone with your religious beliefs. Let's just do whatever we got to do as husband and wife. The husband and wife love each other, but don't bother me with religion anymore. You're crazy. Leave me alone.
That's it for now. Next week, I'll probe deeper into his life, and we'll learn how he finally managed to extricate himself. We'll hear where he stands now. I am Walter Bingham. And in the meantime, I wish you a good week. And please visit your elderly neighbor and make it a good week for him or her too. Goodbye.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska. And I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.